Australian True Crime, the nation's leading independent true crime podcast, is hitting the road with our live show. We're coming to Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane this July, and tickets will be available starting May 10th at 9:30 a.m. sharp. They sold out in 2 hours last time, so do not dilly-dally. We know the suburbs of Australia are teeming with some of the most intriguing and chilling true crime stories the world has ever heard. Don't miss the chance to dive deeper and get involved with a live Q&A. With over 1.5 million downloads monthly, these tickets will sell out. So keep an eye on our social media pages and check the podcast bio for direct links to purchase yours as soon as they're released on Friday, May 10. I can't wait to see you there.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is a true crime podcast, as the title suggests. So please consider this your warning that it's not suitable for children, and it probably will contain content that may be triggering to some people. Also, it's an Australian true crime podcast, so Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners should be aware it may contain the voices of deceased people.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present, and those emerging.
Our guest today is a published poet. If you Google Scott Kieran, though, you'll find him described variously as a bikie enforcer, an arsonist, a kidnapper, and an attempted murderer. Scott is well aware that his rap sheet is nothing short of terrifying. He's hurt and traumatised a lot of people. In 2016, an attempt to intimidate went wrong, and he ended up paying a very high price himself. Scott Kieran joins us on Australian True Crime today to talk about his life and crimes. We begin with his early life, which in many ways does not conform to the template we've come to expect from Australia's most violent men.
From a young age, I've seen, you know, violence as a tool. It's pretty easy to get your way when somebody's scared. It's a pretty good motivating factor for people.
Where did you learn that, do you think? Did you learn that in your own home, from watching your parents interact? Or
no, I didn't. I had a reasonably good childhood. My parents, they split up when I was 11, I think, the first time. They got back together once or twice. But violence in the household wasn't an issue. But I think for me, it was more in my teen years. I grew up in Western Sydney. violence is common in the area. And I've seen guys, look, we didn't have a lot of money in the, like most people grow up around the Penrith area aren't well off. And then the guys that you see that are, you know, like in your view, successful are the guys that join bike clubs and sell drugs. And a part of that success that they enjoy is having to intimidate, having to be violent. Like if someone doesn't pay their drug debt, then you've got to go fucking make an example of them and get your money. So the next guy pays, if that makes sense. So, but not just that, but also just, you know, once you hit the pubs and club scenes. I mean, at the time when I was 17, 18, started going out, I used to go to Penrith Panthers a lot. There's a few pubs around Penrith that were all on the state's most violent pub list. So you wanted to be able to defend yourself. Another element of that is that, you know, like these guys came from the same place that I came from, you know, without a lot of money. And then all of a sudden they're driving nice cars. They're wearing gold, you know, jewelry. They've got lots of cash in their wallet, and people show them respect. Like you walk into a nightclub or a pub and everybody wants to shake their hand and buy them a drink. And then growing up, you know, in my teen years, not having, you know, that respect, not having money, like all that type of stuff. You see, these guys have what I want. You know, I want to live that. Like they've got nice women hanging around them that are showing them interest. I want women to show me interest. This is another thing, a common misconception for guys that get into that life. People sort of, you get a bit of respect, but it's not respect. People might show you respect out of fear, but behind your back, they're going, what a fucking loser. So it is like the picture of success that I grew up and aimed towards. So with that violence, I became an attractive prospect to the bike clubs because now I have something that's valuable to them. You know, like I was a big, angry, violent guy, so I'm of use to them. And now they've got something that I want and I've got something they want. So that's sort of the path towards the hanging around the bike clubs and the crime and et cetera.
Tell us about when you first were gravitated to the Rebels Motorcycle Club, when you joined up. How did it feel?
I just hung around and just went to their parties a lot. I never became a full member. I was more associated with them. There was a period of time where I nommed up, which basically means you're a prospect to be a member type of thing. So I spent some time with that, but that was a few years on. Like I probably spent about 5 years just hanging around and going to the parties and stuff like that. But then when I sort of seen it from, I guess, an inside perspective, I didn't really like what I was seeing. So I sort of hung around. I spent about maybe 8 or 9 months as a norm, and then I just thought, this is not for me, and I don't want to do this anymore.
Why? What was it that you didn't like?
They sort of sell you on this is a brotherhood. Like we are all together. We're a group of mates. We all look out for each other. If you need anything, we'll help you out. You know, like this, we have lots of fun. We party. It's like a family type of thing. You know, we've got each other's back. And from the outside looking in, that's attractive to a lot of guys just in and of itself. And then, you know, obviously there's the money and all the other stuff that go with it and the women. But so once I was on the other side of it, it seemed to me that the brotherhood side of things, it's there when things are going well and it's party time. But then when, you know, things aren't going so well, there was no issues with me going. But I still, just because the club aspect of things wasn't for me, it didn't mean that my criminal offending got stopped. I was still choosing to live my life outside of the law. I didn't want to do it with a bike club. Like the 3 times that I've been to prison, I've been charged with offences that could get me around the 10-year mark 3 times. One of the things that I spent the time, most recent time in prison doing was really looking back and taking ownership for all of the stuff that I've done. And also just having I want to have a genuine understanding of the flow on effect. You know, this is what happens. This is what you cause to people. But, and even if your offending is linked to something to do with your own past trauma and all this type of stuff, you are still then, you're just taking the same pain that you experience and you're putting it onto multiple other people. You're amplifying it by a factor of 10, 100. I think the best thing that you can do is, you know, correct your own course and be better from that point on. Learn from your experiences. And also one of the things I try to do, and one of the motivating factors for the book was to be of benefit to other people. I guess there's a redemption aspect in it that I feel like you go to jail, you serve your debt to society, but then I feel like there's still a responsibility on my part that I'm in a good position where I can, you know, like say, for instance, I could go into the kids' jails and talk to them and, you know, like say, look, this is the course of action. This is a path that I took. This is why you shouldn't go down that path.
Yeah, because we all know that who are they going to listen to, you know? They're not going to listen to me. They're not going to listen to, that's a really valuable
thing. There are very few people on earth that I could think kids in juvenile detention might be interested in listening to, might go back into their room and think about. And I think you could be one of those people. But you are not without loss and you are not without trauma. Can we talk about Harley McKenna?
Yeah, yep, definitely.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So I used to spend a lot of time on the Gold Coast. I used to travel up there regularly, go partying and see friends. And he'd become my closest mate. We were really close friends. Back then I was a party animal and so was he. So well, we met through mutual friends and partying and all that sort of stuff. And anyway, so we used to go out a lot and party and carry on, and he would come down to Sydney. So the long story short of him is that we got kicked out of the pub.
O'Donoghue's Irish Pub in Emu Plains.
That's right, yeah. So we were kicked out and we weren't happy about it. So we just went back to my place and kept on partying and drinking and taking drugs and stuff. And it was just decided that, well, we're not going to cop that. So when it closes, we'll go burn it down. Fuck them. They want to kick us out. We'll fucking burn your pub down.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, we both were pretty, I guess, extreme people with, you know, we take things from 0 to 100 like that. We're both like that. But anyways, when he set fire to the pub, he had fuel on himself and he set fire to himself as well. And I tried to help, I tried to save him, I tried to drag him off and put him out, but he ended up passing away as a result of that.
Harley was 29. He had a daughter.
Yeah. So like when I was touching on earlier about, you know, there's a flow on effect, there's a ripple effect to these type of things. Obviously, the things that jumped to mind there is he had a daughter that was 6 months old when he died.
Oh, my God.
He's got obviously leaves behind, you know, a mother, his siblings, friends, family, like that type of thing impacts a lot of people. And how can you sort of put yourself in the shoes of, say, his mother, for instance, who, by, I don't know why, but I'm very grateful that I still have a very close relationship with his mum, his partner, at the time, and which is the daughter's mother.
It's incredibly gracious of them, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so gracious because I think I could be just so overwhelmed with anger that you two just did something so stupid, pointless, and he died, that I could maybe blame you for the rest of my life.
One of the things that I really struggled with out of that whole scenario, other than the, you know, traumatic death of my friends, and obviously it's a traumatizing situation. I don't think there's a worse way you can die. You know, like, and there's the image in your mind that's never going away. I tried my best to save him, the last words that he said to me, et cetera, all that type of stuff. But then I think that's obviously trauma, you know, that you have to work through and get over. But I thought, I really fucking struggled to understand why his mum and these people were supporting me. Like, that probably fucked with my head more than anything.
Were you convicted?
No, the charges against me were dropped. So, but by a legal technicality. So regardless of what, when I was charged with his death, obviously that was hard to take. But you think, well, I was complicit in going along with something that did cause somebody's death, even if they were complicit and willing to go along with it anyway. Like, can't have people behaving in ways that just people die and there'd be no fucking legal ramifications. I knew I was going to get charged. I got a reasonably good understanding of the law, so I knew it was coming. But when they dropped it against me, I didn't feel any better about it. It's like, oh, I'm off the hook. Like, oh, well, I still hold myself responsible now. Like, I know that with my friendship with him too, like, I was in a position where I would have some influence over the guy to say, hey, we're not doing this. This is fucking stupid. Pull your head in. And he would have. So I didn't really care what the law has to say about it anyway. Like, I care more about what his mum has to say about it, what his daughter will have to say about it, how I feel about it, and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, there were always going to be consequences for the owners of the pub. Let's not forget them. Yeah. So not only has their pub been, you know, attacked by arsonists because you were obviously being assholes at the pub, that's why they kicked you out,
yeah,
but now a man has died as part of it. Again, that's so traumatic for them. How did it change your life that night?
Initially, for the worse. That was my second time in jail. So, and I just went on doing the same shit. Like, when I went to jail that time, I didn't want to deal with it. So, like, there's an abundance and availability of drugs in jail. So I started using Xanax in jail every day, and I just did not want to deal with it at all. So I just buried myself under a drug habit. I was, you know, suffering the trauma of the event. I had two court cases going on at the time because I was on bail at the time of that offence for a previous offence. So I had my legal problems were stacked to the ceiling. I was looking at, between the two cases, I reckon up to maybe 15 years jail. So I thought, well, that's obviously a long time. So I didn't want to think about that. I didn't want to think or deal with the fact that my mate died, how he died. You know, I had post-traumatic stress and that was very fresh and new. And so my life was in the fucking toilet, basically. You know, just like, oh, I'm not dealing with that. I don't want to know about it. So I'm just going to take drugs and not deal with it. So that's what I've done for nearly a year. But when I had another 6 months jail to go from that point. Also, although the manslaughter case against me was dropped, the arson wasn't. So I was charged with arson in company. So I had some more jail time to do. So I got out from that. And then I think the hardest thing about getting out at that time was the real world ramifications of his death and what happened. You know, like, when you're in jail, it might not seem so, but you're very much insulated from the outside world. It's not just through contact, but you don't have to deal with any of the shit at the outside. You don't pay rent, you don't have bills. You know, like, if in that case, you know, like, I wasn't out there watching and dealing with the grief of the people that he left behind. You know, they're trying to adjust to life without, you know, their partner, their father, their son. I was essentially living in a bubble and I didn't have to deal with any of it. So when I got out, it was in my face all of a sudden. And it wasn't long before I was, you know, drinking and back on the Xanax again, and which led to, was a, you know, factor in the next case. So then I found myself back in jail only 8 weeks after being released. So obviously that's fucking...
Wow.
When I came back to prison that time, which is the most recent time, I thought, I am not living my life like this. I'm not in and out. I'm not going to take drugs. I'm not going to... I do not want to contribute to the fucking statistics anymore. And I want to be a father to my son, which you cannot be from prison. So I thought, I'm not doing it. I thought that I'm probably going to be in jail for a very long time. And whether that's 2 years or 10 years, I'm going to get out a better man. But the only way for me to do that is to solve the problems that are causing me to keep coming to prison. So I had to work it out. First of all, I've reached out to the system to see what the system can do for me. And once I figured out that the system is going to do fuck all for me, I have to sort it out for myself. So I thought, well, I can read. The jails have libraries. So I thought, any book that I could get on any type of psychology, I want to understand my psychology. I want to understand why I make the choices that I make. I want to understand why I am the way that I am, etc. So I just went to the library and got book after book after book. But I also started talking to people. I thought, well, I want to hear other people's stories and what they do. Like, you will find all sorts of people in jail from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different ages, races, religion, every type of person for every type of offense. There's people in there for low-level shoplifting things to people in for murder and drug importation and everything in between. So I thought, I'll talk to people. So I'll just strike up conversations with people about their stories, and I'll try and nail down on what makes people do the things that they do, because then maybe I can figure out why I do the things that I do. And then I just thought, also, I started to develop my own philosophies around things like, you know, what the choices that you make and why we make the choices that we make. So basically, it was just me doing my best to figure shit out for myself. It took a long time. I was in jail for 4 years, 3 months that last time, and I think it took pretty much every day of that 4 years, 3 months, to get to a point where I can say, I think that I've done enough work on myself so that I have a reasonable understanding of what I was doing wrong and what not to do in the future, and then moving forward, how to keep that up, because it's always work. You speak to somebody who's a drug addict, they're always working at it.
Thank you to our guest today, Scott Kieran. His book is called Prison Poetry, and there's a link in the show notes to this episode to help you buy your copy.
If you need support after listening to this podcast, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737 732 or 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. Indigenous Australians can contact 13 Yarn on 13 92 76 or 13yarn.org.au. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Australian True Crime, the nation's leading independent true crime podcast, is hitting the road with our live show. We're coming to Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane this July, and tickets will be available starting May 10th at 9:30 a.m. sharp. They sold out in 2 hours last time, so do not dilly-dally. We know the suburbs of Australia are teeming with some of the most intriguing and chilling true crime stories the world has ever heard. Don't miss the chance to dive deeper and get involved with a live Q&A. With over 1.5 million downloads monthly, these tickets will sell out. So keep an eye on our social media pages and check the podcast bio for direct links to purchase yours as soon as they're released on Friday, May 10. I can't wait to see you there.